Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Monday Night Show. Nice to be back after a win for once, EJ. We've finally done it. We've broken the hoodoo after, what was it, 4 or 5 weeks of a little bit of pain and suffering, but that's part and parcel of being a Richmond supporter, I think, these days. And it just shows how tight and how close footy is. But nice to be on the end of 4 points, a much-needed 4 points, mind you, as well. So how are you, mate? Good to have you back on.
Yeah, very, very well, thank you. Yeah, good to be back on. I wasn't looking forward to the prospect at halftime yesterday, but here we are.
No, it was looking pretty grim. And, you know, you look at all the socials, and then I think people had every right to think the game is kind of shot at halftime. And Brisbane are a quality outfit. So for our guys to make up that difference in a half was pretty good. And I'm sure we'll touch on that later on. But as you can see, folks, we've got a very special guest with us tonight for the first half an hour. So we're going to sink some time into that before we talk about the game. Wayne Campbell, welcome to the show. 297 games, 172 goals, four-time Jack Dye medalist, if you don't mind, and the captain from 2001 to 2004, and, of course, a Hall of Fame member. That's a fair resume you got there with the Tigers.
Thanks, Chris. Very nice of you. AJ, how are you?
Yeah, very well.
And a huge shout-out as well to Nick for organising this as well, for reaching and getting on the show. So much appreciated, Nick. Love your work as always. So to your Richmond royalty, Wayne, I think is the easiest way to put it. Before we get stuck in, I do have to share this photo. I've had this photo. I can't remember how old I was when I got it, but it's when the club did the old birthday photos. So I had that one on my desk for, well, it would have to have been at least 8 or 9. So appreciate the personalised signed photo there. It's definitely a lot better than what the teams do these days. It's all electronic now, I think.
Yeah, I think with the hairstyle, it looks like around 97. Would that be right?
97. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get stuck into some questions about your time at the Tigers. So, drafted with pick 29 in the 1989 draft, what was that moment like for you? Did you have much contact with other clubs around that time? Did you know where you were going, or was it all a bit random?
No. I was going to say an interesting story. You'll be the judge of that. No, I mean, 1989, so the draft had only been going for 3 years. I think 86 was the first draft. And you used to get letters. So you used to get home from school. So I was in year 11, and you would get letters, and it would have, you know, the Western Bulldogs, or probably Footscray, sorry, back then, you know, or West Coast Eagles or whatever. And I think, what was there then? Probably, I don't even know, 16 clubs, 14 clubs. So I think I got letters from most clubs. And then if it went to the next step, they came up and visited you. So they came up to Bendigo, and I don't know how many clubs would have done that, but I think Richmond might have. So Doug Vickers was the recruiting manager. Kevin Bartlett was the coach. Doug might come. He is still a good friend of mine. Became a manager for a little while, and then still a really good friend. But interestingly, on the day, it was my English exam. So I think the draft was probably at 10 or 11 or something, and it's fair to say there was no coverage. There was, you know, there was no Fox footy. There was, you know, there was none of that sort of stuff. So got home from school, and, you know, obviously no mobile phones at all. So got home from school and just still didn't know. And then I was watching the STV8 news in Bendigo, and they said some local players got drafted, and they mentioned I reckon Lee Colbert might have got drafted, and then two of my teammates at Golden Square, Christian Lister and Paul McConville, but they named all of them first. And didn't get to me till later. So I thought, I might have missed out. So I found out via probably Alan Besley on the STV Art News. And then I didn't get a call from Richmond till like 11 o'clock at night. I was probably there. Oh, it would have been their fifth pick, because that was Mac Abanik and I think Robert Wren and Alistair Scott and Nathan Bauer, I think, were before me. So maybe they were making calls to all those other guys. But, yeah, finally got a call about 11 o'clock at night, and I was sort of excited because I barracked for Richmond. And my mum said, I got off the phone, my mum said, who did you get drafted by? And I said, Richmond. And she said, shit, really? And I said, yeah. I said, it's exciting because I barracked for them. And she goes, yeah, but they're not much good. And I said, yeah, but they'll turn it around. We can't possibly keep being that bad. But I was wrong, unfortunately. We continued to be bad for a while, so. So no, it wasn't. There was no Fox footy, no interviews, whatever. It was a phone call late at night.
Oh, that's right. At least they put the phone call in. They saved the best till last, no doubt. you walk into the club, you got players like Waitman, Lambert, Phil Egan, Mark Lee, Benny Gale. What was that like as a kid, especially if you're being a Tiger supporter as well? Did any of them take you under their wing upon arrivals to show you some guidance?
Well, I actually had a decision to make before that because it was I was doing year 11 and they were keen for me to come down for the year 12 year, which was 1990. But after much sort of to-ing and fro-ing, I decided to stay in Bendigo to do year 12. So in the 89 year, I played 23 or 24 senior games for Golden Square and we won the flag that year. So I was playing against men as a very, very skinny 16-year-old wingman and then decided to stay another year, which was a really hard decision at the time, but the best decision I could have made because I got to do year 12, finished school at Bendigo High, which is a really good school. But probably just as importantly, got to play another 22 or 23 senior games against men. So by the time I got down to Richmond, I'd played 40-odd senior games. Now, of course, you're talking Bendigo Footy League versus AFL, but I think that was important. So in that time, I played an under-19 game, I reckon, in 1990, but I also went to a couple of pre-season camps or the pre-season camp of the year before and then didn't go and then went to a pre-season camp. So I sort of got to know, a few of them. Probably the one that stood out was Craig Lambert, was the one that sort of took me under my wing, under his wing the most. But there's a guy called Paul Morris who was from Oyen, who I think he was there in 90 but not 91. So I knew a couple of people, but no, they're all pretty welcoming.
That's good to hear. They welcomed you with open arms. And you made your debut round 5, 91 against Fitzroy. Got 20 disposals. I suppose that kind of ties back to what you said before, having that year off playing against men, no doubt assisted in being able to hit the ground running on your debut. What are your memories of your first game?
So we hadn't won a game. I think we were 0-4. And I came in for Michael Mitchell, which I was a bit flat about because he was one of my favourite players as a Tiger supporter. So elated to get a game, but would have loved Michael Mitchell to be playing. I remember running out and just the crowd. You know, it was probably 12,000 there. So it's not like it was 80,000 at the G, but there was 12,000 there. But just the roar of the crowd, which you just had never felt before. And I lined up on one wing and I was on Richard Osborne and then Jamie Elliott, who was playing about his second game, was on the other wing on Michael Pickering. And I don't know which coach blinked first, but within about 6 or 7 minutes, we'd swap wings. So it was the kid against the kid and then Pickering against Osborne, which is a bit better matchup, I think. So, and then we won. Yeah, we won the game and I can't remember too much about it. I got a nice photo at home, I reckon, where I was with David Cloak and KB or something like that. So had a shot at goal late, missed it. It's about all I can remember, I'm sorry.
Ah, well, you kicked your first goal in round 8 versus Collingwood. Can you remember that?
The Mother's Day Massacre. So Hoggy kicked 10 and well, obviously 91, so the Pies were coming off their premiership. And I don't know, I just remember being thrilled to be on the ground with Darren Mullane and Craig Kelly and, you know, guys that I'd been to watch in the grand final the year before. So it was a bit thrilling. And they obviously were, they'd had the premiership hangover. And we were sort of going, okay, I suppose. But yeah, Hoggy kicked 10 that day and we got the win. And I do remember that goal actually. So yeah, slotted that through and the left of screen.
That's bizarre. Like you're at the grand final and 12 months later, or not even 12 months later, you're on the ground and you're standing next to them. That's just, it must sort of seem a bit surreal.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's like most kids that come into AFL and you know, playing your first year or so, you're barracked for someone and you're barracked against them. And being at that 90 grand final and seeing the brawl at quarter time, it was like, that's pretty fun. And then to think you're out on the same ground the year after was, it's a bit intimidating, but then you sort of, you gradually just get used to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't have gone anywhere near my lane. I'm not
outrageous. And I didn't either, by the way.
From 91 to 93, we had three different coaches, KB, Alan Jeans and Swooper. How difficult was that for the team, having that different coach, different attitude, different method every year? It must be sort of a bit hard to sort of stay balanced or whatever. I don't think it is a surprise that we continue to struggle when we keep changing things up.
Yeah, unfortunately, it became sort of what I become accustomed to. So I remember we ran the tan after a seconds loss, and Emmett Dunn, who was the coach at the time, it was a bit embarrassing actually, because he was sort of giving the team a dressing down and saying we weren't much good. And he said, "Oh, Wayne's come from Golden Square, or a really strong club. You know, he wouldn't be used to this," which was kind of true, but it was, you know, like Golden Square, we're a really good country club. And then to come to Richmond and, as you say, have three coaches in my first 3 years was not ideal. I mean, you don't want that, because it means you're not having success. So KB was in his last year, obviously, my first year, and then was lucky enough to have Alan Jean, who was just, I mean, I've told the story probably many times, but the first time I ever met him, he said, "I've watched you on the tape, Sonny, I think you can play." And I'd played 12 games the year before, and I had no idea whether I could play or not. But when he said that, I was like, "You're a pretty smart man. Maybe he knows something." So, you know, just instilled confidence in me, and you know, it was a life lesson of if you can instill confidence into people, and they've probably got to then have the ability to carry out what you want them to do. But a man of that stature saying that to me, a 19-year-old boy who played 12 games, it was pretty nice to hear, and was lucky enough just to learn lots of lessons off him in the 12 months, and then. But yeah, then he got ill, so moved on, and Swoop became so. And then we had a good little run for, what was it, 3 years? So, as a young kid, you even 18, 19, 20, it's probably not till you get to 50 games that you start to think about all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I suppose it gets thrown your way and you deal with it.
So we improved a bit in 94. What do we put that down to?
So Paul Broderick and Michael Gale came over in 94, didn't they? Yeah. So that was that. We probably then just had some more experiences. So some, you know, Knights and those sort of guys became a bit older as well. I became a bit older. Gale became a bit older. Daffy came in. Richardson played 94, didn't he?
Yes.
So he was 93, 94. So, yeah, I suppose we had some younger talent and we had some more experienced guys. But I think 93, we only won maybe four games. But then 94, we had a good run. And I think we might have won 10 or 12 games, didn't we? And just missed the finals. So it was probably no surprise then in 95 we sort of went again with pretty much the same team.
Yeah, well, I mean, 95 was a huge year, not only for the club but for yourself personally, winning your first Jack Dye medal. How much did it mean to you winning that award in such a strong season for the club?
It was a nice honour. Yeah, I've been second a couple of times before that, probably a couple at least, I think. So to win it was nice. And we had a really good year. We probably extracted the most out of the talent that we had. I don't know, probably top six or seven players played 23 or played every game, I'd say, which was what, 25 games, three finals. So Broderick and Gale were sort of really experienced and played some really good footy. But at the end of that year, the coach left. So that sort of turned things around a little bit as well.
And the semi-final versus Essendon in front of 88,000 people, we win by 13 points after being in, you know, all sorts at halftime. I think we were down by 30 points. What are your memories of that game and how did you manage to turn it around? And it was an interesting stat that I saw that you actually had one hit out in that game.
Did I?
That's really impressive.
We played actually really well the week before against North. So it was, I remember that, that particularly we ran out in the banner. The banner said something like, "We've been in the wilderness for 13 years or something. So since 82. And then it ripped off and it was like a curtain and it ripped off and then it said, "We're back." And the roar of the crowd was enormous. And we were actually pretty competitive against North. North were a bloody good team and Carey was up and running, but we were competitive then. And then we played really well. And then we were really poor in the first half against Essendon. I don't know. I think we just got going. I think Scotty Turner knocked out Gary O'Donnell, which sort of helped because he was playing on me. So it was nice to not have him. Nick Daffy and Chris Nash and Roger had been pretty quiet early and got going. And so Scotty Turner moved forward and kicked the goal. So, yeah, it was pretty good. To win any game of footy is bloody hard. To win a final in the MCG, and I was, you know, never got to play in a grand final, never got to win one, but to win two big finals at the MCG was certainly the highlight of my career, and that one was pretty special.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us of a similar vintage, it's one of our favourite games. I know I had it taped and it sort of got a bit worn out. We had a great year, and then John Northey and Robert Wall swapped camps.
Mm.
It didn't seem to work out with Wallsy. What do we put that down to? Because it looked like we were building really nicely, and then everything sort of...
Oh, I think he's probably said himself. And I really enjoyed playing under Wallsy. He was hard. I was going to say he was hard and fair. He was hard and tough. He was probably fair as well. But I really enjoyed playing under him. But I think he probably said himself he'd finished up at Brisbane, and they had that really good run towards the finals in 95. And I think he was probably set his mind to, coming back to Melbourne and write for The Age and do a bit of media. And then all of a sudden there was a job there for him. So then he elected to take it. And whether he absolutely had the passion for it or not, I didn't detect that he didn't, but maybe some players did. I'm not sure. But as I said, I really enjoyed playing under him. I mean, it sort of seemed like the perfect fit at the time. Like, Swooper was really motivational and could get the boys playing for each other. And then the thought was Wallsy, tactically pretty sound, would come in and just put the cherry on top. But for whatever reason, and again, I was I'm probably only whatever I was, 23 or 24 at the time, and you don't have a great feel for that stuff when you're that age, I don't reckon, and you just sort of think it's going to happen. And then I couldn't tell you absolutely why it didn't happen, but... over the next couple of years, we had some good wins. We learned a lot, but that only lasted a couple of years.
Yeah, personally, as a supporter, I was filthy when Swooper left, but, we got no control. We just looking on the outside looking in. In 2001, you were announced as captain of the football club. How did it come about, and was that something that you wanted?
How it came about was interesting. Did I want it? No, I didn't really. Oh, well, no, I didn't think it was going to happen. And it happened while I was in Ireland, actually. I was over there playing in the international rules, and someone might have rang me, a journalist or something, might have said, you're a chance to be captain. I didn't really understand what had happened. And then I heard that Matthew Knights had stepped down, and then Danny rang me and said I'd like to catch up when he got back. And to be honest, I was sort of half, geez, he telling me I'm not captain, because I was vice captain at the time. Was he half telling me I'm not captain or the alternative? So he took me out for dinner at the Street Cafe in St Kilda and told me he'd like to be captain. And yeah, it was a really nice honour. It's still my proudest achievement, I think, to play individually for a period of time and be consistent was good, but to be chosen to captain your club and do it for a period of time was certainly my greatest achievement.
Oh, that's awesome. So what were some of the highlights and the lowlights of being a captain? And talking to Spud, he seemed like a real character. What was the relationship like with him?
Yeah, he was great. He's just, he was a leader in every sense of the word, whether... I would say no matter where you were with him, whether it was at his place with Anita, whether you're at the races in a car park, whether you're at a pub, there'd be 15 people around him, and he'd be the energy and the life and be talking to everyone, and he had an anecdote and a joke for everything, and you just wanted to, as a coach, you just wanted to play for him. He got us playing a good style of footy. And probably before that, we'd only had maybe two assistant coaches. In fact, under Jeff Gieshan, we had two assistant coaches. One was Ross Lyon, who was pretty good, and the other one was Brendan McCartney, who was pretty good. So we had a reasonable panel there. But I think when Danny came, he had Greg Hutchison from Melbourne, he had Darren Crocker from North Melbourne, he had Dave Whedon. We might have had a couple of even part-timers as well. So we became a bit more professional, a bit more like some other clubs, I reckon. So we had a really good style of play, and he could get us to gel together because of just what he was like and what Anita was like and what the family were like. And it was we all talked about it after his passing, that it was probably the most fun we ever had as a footy club. And we had, I think in 2000 when he took over. Again, we finished ninth, but that meant we sort of won 11 or 12 games and had a really good run at it, and we lost a couple late. Could have got there. And then in 2001, we had, you know, had a really good season and won whatever we won, 15 games, and had that big win against Carlton and also the prelim up at Brisbane. So it then didn't pan out the next two or three years after that, but the first couple of years were really, really good fun, and all of it on his back.
Ben Holland was actually on last week telling a good story about your trip in, over in London playing. And I think Spud was a bit on edge when there was a few bit of partying antics going on a few nights out from the game. But I think he was maybe one of the ring leaders on that front.
I think that might have been right. Yeah, I was I was lucky enough that I didn't play in that game. So I was allowed to maybe go out the night before as well. But
Put your head out, yeah. 2001, as you said, a huge year for the club. Back into the finals. Winning that semi-final against Carlton must have been a pretty good feeling, and you led the way for us with 30 disposals and 7 tackles. What are your memories from that game? And how did it differ from, I suppose, playing in the finals in 95?
A bit older, I suppose. So, and captaining the club, so there's a bit more responsibility. A bit different to the 95 that we'd we got smacked by Essendon in the first final. I think we had to play, speaking of Ben Holland, we had to play Essendon in round 23. And I think we needed to win to finish fourth. They were on top and couldn't move. So they, I think Ben Holland, was he playing centre-half back at the time and played on, did he play on Alessio or someone like that anyhow? They flipped, they didn't really care round 23, whereas we really did, and we had a really good win. But then they flipped some stuff around in the final and just, yeah, they were way too good for us, and I played terribly. And so there's a fair bit of pressure going on into that next round and that next round of the finals. And I'd say we're probably underdogs because Carlton were going pretty well at the time. He wound us up. He wound us up big time from about Monday or Tuesday, Spud. He was, I think the administration knew at that Monday meeting that it was going to be on because they could hear his yelling and slamming his fist against the wall and all that sort of stuff. And it was a really good week. He played it really well. He went really hard at us early and said, you know, not competitive enough, and the final was embarrassing and all that. And then instilled us with confidence as the week went on. And we were certainly combative going into that game with Ray Hall sort of butting heads with Mark Porter and all sorts of other stuff going on. So it was a pretty satisfying win. I can only imagine what it would be like to win a grand final, because that big final at the MCG in front of 80,000 people was pretty satisfying.
I can imagine, yeah. Before we get into some questions about your life outside of football, a lot of people were asking us to ask you how come you were stuck on 297 games. Yeah. Like, there might be a very easy and logical reason why you didn't get to 300, but I think Nick messaged us saying that it was maybe a bit of your choice that you didn't want to hit the 300. Is there any truth to that?
No, I would have hit 300, but I was done. I was finished. I probably went into the year thinking it was going to be my last year. So I gave up the captaincy at the end of 2004. So Danny left, Terry Wallace came in. I thought it was probably going to be my last year. The club offered me a contract. But I sort of, Sarah and I were getting married. We'd been going out for a long time. We were getting married. We had a trip planned to go overseas, which I could have put on hold, by the way. She wouldn't have been happy, but we could have put it on hold. I remember Terry saying to me at the time, you'll regret not getting to 300. But other than people asking me about it quite a bit, I couldn't care less. I was,
just a number?
I think so. Yeah. Seeing Shedzy reach the 300 on the weekend was just so wonderful. Would I have liked to get there? Yeah. Does it worry me? No, not really.
Fair enough.
In fact,
no, that makes complete sense. Makes cool. Yeah.
But no, we lost the. So did I contemplate it? Yeah. Did I make the right decision? No, not doing it. Absolutely. I watched the first game. I was in New York and we were on our trip around the world and whatever. And I listened to the first game of the 2006 season and we lost by 125 points. And I was like, I've made the right call. Because if I had have limped to 300 and, you know, and retired after round three, that I wouldn't have wanted to do that. So
fair enough.
More than happy to finish up then.
No, that makes sense. You've obviously stayed very heavily involved in footy post your playing career. How eye-opening was doing the AFL umpire bus role, having then been on both sides of the fence?
Yeah, pretty eye-opening. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Never had any thought of going into umpiring. I don't think anyone ever sort of thinks that they're going to do that in terms of the administration. I mean, there's young people who are, you know, boundary umpires or goal umpires and field umpires who stick with it, but. I remember meeting Mark Evans, who's my current boss up here at the Gold Coast as well. And he said they were looking to, you know, put someone in there that could provide some sort of football experience and sort of almost set it up like a footy department. And I was probably looking to be a GM of footy as well. And he said that he would like this to be a pathway for people to go into GMs of footy role. So lucky enough to be given the opportunity. He was a wonderful boss. It was a really good time at the AFL while I was there, which was, I think, 14, 15. And I learned a lot. Yeah, I've got to say I didn't know anything about umpiring as I went in there. And some would say I didn't know anything as I left, but I would like to think I learned a bit. Some people I've found when I went in there, there's two types of people with umpiring rules. There's people that are really fascinated by rules and umpiring, and there's people that aren't. And I was one. I didn't have much of an interest in the rules and stuff. But having gone in there, I quickly developed a real passion for it, and I still have now. In fact, even in the coach's box, Stewie, when he's yelling at the umpire, sort of yells at me because he thinks I'm still responsible for it. So, but I'll wear that.
Jeez, a bit harsh.
I'm fascinated by the rules, and I'm really interested in that. You say you learn a lot, and obviously I think the umpires get a real rough ride. The media doesn't help things. People in commentary not knowing the rules properly, saying, oh, that's got to be this, that's got to be that. Is there stuff that you learn, or is there maybe a message that the umpire department now could get out that the public would benefit from?
Oh, that's a broad question. It took me about 12 months to realise. I still remember where I was walking and I had this little epiphany that the one thing that people want from umpiring is consistency. That's what we all say, don't we? We just want them to be consistent. And it's an absolutely unobtainable goal because for a few reasons. One is most people... most people, including me, before I went into the umpire, don't understand the rules. So they don't understand pushing the back. They don't understand holding the ball. Most people watching the game wear a scarf, which is, in your instance, a Richmond scarf. So you'll look at the incident on the weekend against Brisbane and you'll see something, and the guy with the Brisbane or the girl with the Brisbane scarf will see something completely different. And the amount of times I hear about this consistency, the one in the first quarter was exactly the same as the one in the third quarter. You'll watch them. And then I watch them and I go, they're not only not similar, they're completely different. You know? And then the third reason why consistency is unobtainable is the umpires make mistakes. So people will go, oh, that one was like that one. And even if it sort of half wasn't, so yeah, that's just because they made a mistake. So this goal that we set out to obtain, which is consistency in umpiring, especially in AFL, because there's so many grey areas in terms of holding the ball and deliberate out of bounds or whatever that's called now. The other bit I would say that I think some people sort of find not interesting, but have you ever gone anywhere in any league in Australia where, I don't know where you guys are from, but whether it's Glen Waverley or Bendigo or Perth, and you go there and people in there go, geez, the umpiring here is good. Really, really good. But we've never heard those words, have we? In a particular league, I find the umpiring here really good. We never say that. And it's sort of not possible for them all to be hopeless. So therefore, there's got to be something to that. And that is that the game's really hard to umpire. And for those three reasons before, we kind of think they're poor, even if they're not.
Yeah, very valid. It's a tough gig. It's absolutely a tough gig.
I agree. I think you go, Chris. I'm looking at the clock.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, thank you for your time. Well, one last sort of question. Currently at the Gold Coast Suns, putting together a fantastic season so far, obviously coming off a win on the weekend. Where do you see both the Suns and the Tigers ending up at the end of this season, albeit that we are fighting for a very similar spot on the ladder?
we can't both finish eighth, can we? I don't think.
No.
Well, we both can't finish eighth. We can't both finish in the eight. I was watching your game on the weekend and Shane's 300th, and I was sort of half barracking against you, which is pretty bad, isn't it? So, because we needed you to lose. But it was a great game of footy and wonderful to see the Tigers win, and especially on Shane's 300th. So, where are we going to finish? We hope we both win some games toward the end, and we win a couple more than you do.
Maybe. Fair enough. Now you definitely got the club going in the right direction. So I think it's been a noticeable turnaround since you've been on board, with the way they're projecting, and they've got a talented list, and they are bound to play finals sooner rather than later. So we appreciate you coming on tonight, mate, for the 30 minutes. Very, very much appreciated. Great to hear from you, and all the best at the Suns, and hopefully you get a chance in finals this year, but just not at our expense.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks, mate. All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Wayne Campbell, absolutely Richmond royalty there joining us tonight. So good to hear from him and his story as a Tiger. So, EJ, well, you can't get much better than that, can you, with the former skipper?
There was so many. I mean, we skipped questions and there were so many more that we wanted to ask. It's just he's probably got more to offer in a conversation than 95% of the people that we could speak to.
Yeah, exactly.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. And especially, and I know we obviously had him on, I suppose, more specifically to talk about his time as a Tiger, but even just the bit about the umpiring piece is fascinating as well. Like, you'd just love to keep picking his brain about that too.
But that was a real Pandora's box moment. It started to all come out, and even that little 2-minute clip has me thinking about it slightly differently.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
he's right. Everyone's got their own lens that they're watching it through, and combine it with hard rules, natural mistakes, and it's just, you know, and the media focus on umpiring now is incredible. So, yeah, I reckon, apart from a couple of errors both ways, it was actually umpired pretty well on the weekend.
Yeah. And look, there's always swings and roundabouts, and we're always going to have our frustrations. And I suppose that from a supporter point of view, we're probably going off historical data with finishing bottom of the free kick game, which is a little bit to do with us and so on. But he's right. There's, you know, not much chance of getting full consistency. So we'll just keep pushing on and doing what we've got to do.
Nathan, I'm going to get to that. Don't worry. I'm going to get to that, and I think you'll be surprised. And Glenn, that is a great comment. That's the first thing I saw pop up. He's talking about, I'm still haters regardless.
We're allowed to think that. No, it's all good. All right, we will get cracking into the game, but I have seen a familiar face pop up in the bottom part of my screen. CB, welcome, mate. How are you?
Good evening, everybody. How are you? Where's Walker?
He just half an hour. You just missed him.
Oh, you set me up, man. You set me up.
Oh, I did say that. How was your meeting?
As you'd imagine, talking cricket on the 1st of August is always pretty sexy stuff. So, yeah, got a few things sorted. So, we're off and running cricket season.
Off and running.
There it is.
All right. Yes, there's a few people who, yes, Tiggs was meant to be on, but he has had a workplace incident. He's pulled a deltoid muscle, and he's as stiff as a board, can hardly move his neck. So he thought it'd be a bad look for the show if he's looking like a robot. So he pulled out, which is fair enough. All right, we'll get stuck into the game.
Chris, I've got a net. Like I spoke to EJ, but did you see there was a concerned citizens report on after Sunday?
A concerned citizens report? No.
Yeah. So, apparently, Lachie Neal, he entered the MCG at 12:30 on Sunday afternoon and hasn't been seen since.
You sure he didn't get a dink on the back of Charlie Cameron's motorbike?
He doesn't have two accelerators. The guy's got to learn. He's never ridden a motorbike in his life. But anyway.
Lachie Neal got a coach's vote, just letting you know.
Yeah. Did he really?
Yeah.
What about?
It was a pity one, like your one for Jake Arts earlier in the year.
I stand by that vote. I stand by that vote.
Oh, gee, that was controversial. My goodness. What about, before we talk about the game, Mitch Robinson obviously gave a bit of stick to the cheer squad, who undoubtedly be hurling abuse over the fence at him first. I won't try and hide that. But then to go on to onto the socials and try and sort of play the you got to stay classy card when he's flipping the bird, when they're 7 goals up and then a tail between the legs after the game.
Bit of fun, bit of banter.
At least own what you've done. Don't try and make it all seem like it's one-way traffic. Own what you've done and have a laugh about it.
He shows a bit of personality and puts it out there.
I like that he'll talk about it, but don't try and make like it was all one-way traffic.
He's lucky Marlon didn't kill him. That's the real story.
He did his best. I mean, that was just a brain fade. You know, we can laugh about it now because, one, Robbo wasn't injured, and two, he missed the goal. But, my God, that was terrible. All right. Actually, before you suck in the game, EJ, you said you had a bloodbath. I don't want to overlook that.
Pardon?
Yeah, he said he had a bloodbath. I'll tell
you, Fox footy, hang your heads in shame. Right? Dusty Martin's old man died. I think it's hard enough that he has to deal with that than for Fox footy to put out this rubbish clickbait report about the post-mortem and about the coroner's report. It's really poor taste. It's bloody disappointing. So there's a big headline saying, you know, report revealed from Shane Martin's, you know, coroner's report, you know, drugs and steroids found in system. And then you go and read the article and they talk about the steroids, which is obviously he's a bodybuilder or whatever, but the drugs were pain medication and depression medication. They were prescripted and the amount that was found in his body was consistent with his prescription. So it was what it was. For Fox to put out that headline like that was in bloody shit taste. On one minute, we've got the media telling us to back off Ginnivan and, oh, mental health, and everyone's playing mental health. How do you think a clickbait report like that is going to make Dusty feel? It's a shit act. Really, really disappointed with Fox Sports.
But they wonder why the club gives them nothing. They wonder why Dustin Martin gives them nothing. They don't deserve anything from him 100%. Or the club.
100%. Oh, I was so filthy. Our good friend Snake Teff put that out this afternoon and it popped up on my feed and I saw it and I was like, you are kidding me.
Yeah, I got the little preview alert on my phone and it showed me the first bit. I'm like, surely not. Surely they've not run with something as personal as that. But here we are. And
well, you know what?
I don't blame Dusty for not talking to him because, you know, they're not going to ask him about his footy. They're not going to ask him, you know, what was it like being back out in the ground, Cumberland, kicking goals, like whatever it is. It's just going to be crap questions.
Jack Riewoldt needs to make a stand when he's next on that Fox footy show and just tell him that was a real low shit act.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did in not so many words. I don't think he's afraid to fly the flag on that front.
No.
And I hope Dimmer does too. I hope Harvey comes out and says something too.
Yeah. Yeah. But, hopefully we can get to September and Dusty can come back in and give him a real shove it up and type moment.
I reckon Bubblicious can do with a spell too, mate. Whoever can.
Yeah, we'll see how that tracks.
Nice knowing you, Bubblicious.
We'll get stuck into the game. So Richmond, 15-14, 104, defeated Brisbane, 14-13, 97 by 7 points. But this is one of those genuine tale of two halves, fellas. And I think every Richmond supporter was well within their rights at halftime to think that game was cooked. We were playing worse than North, even though they beat us. But we were just nowhere near it. Like we were sort of saying before the show, EJ, it was the 45-degree kicks into the corridor with no pressure whatsoever that was absolutely cutting us open. And Brisbane are a quality team. You can't give teams good looks like that. But what were you feeling at halftime, lads? Where was your mind at? And how did we end up overcoming the Lions to get the 4 points?
EJ was telling me to start loading up because the comeback was on at halftime. He was telling me to get on the sports bet app.
Mate, I thought we were absolutely toast. I gave us none. Oh, but that is not – see, we're going to talk about plenty of positives, absolutely no doubt, because second half, fantastic. But we can't paper over the cracks. That's not the first time sides have opened us up through the guts by 45-ing back into the corridor and just running straight out the middle and the front. It's been a when we do get opened up, that's been a consistent method that's been used. So going forward, next season, whatever, that's something we certainly do have to look at.
And it was how quickly they were scoring and how accurate they were. I mean, Danaher was kicking three or four straight. Cameron was kicking straight. And it was just looking like that same old story, CB, where we were missing our early opportunities to keep ourselves alive. And they were just going bang, bang, bang. They were just chock full of confidence.
It's fair to say the text messages to my brother by about halfway through the second quarter were pretty much X-rated with how I was just lamenting how it was, like you said, they couldn't miss and we couldn't hit the side of a barn from point-blank range. And it was so frustrating. And the other thing was, like, our skill level in general, like, even guys like Short, they were fudging kicks. The people that were making the mistakes, you wouldn't expect it. And we kept overrunning the ball. Like, it was a horrendous first half. Let's face it, it was a horrendous first half. Like, there's no other way to put it.
And Lucas, to your point, I reckon everyone was screaming at the TV the same thing. How long did it take us to man up Coleman, who absolutely tore us a new one? I think he had almost 500 meters gained in a quarter of football. Like, that's just staggering that someone's allowed to do that. A lot of players don't even get that for a game. He was phenomenal, and full credit to him for, you know, playing his role perfectly. But we just didn't pay him any respect in that first quarter, and he was chopping off everything.
Yeah, and I saw a post up there from Nick as well saying that we eventually clogged up the middle with two extras. Again, what took us so long? Because we were getting beaten by the same method for an extended time. So maybe a couple of the changes in the second half were forced upon us, with Grimes going off and Boulder having to go back and Miller in the ruck. And, you know, is that the end of the, especially with Grimes looking like it's very unlikely he'll be back, is that the end of the Boulder forward experiment for the time being?
I hope so.
Yeah, and as bad as it is to see Grimes going down, obviously we would rather Grimes be out there, but Alter going back just again showed his value and importance and how much structurally better we look, especially with Tom Lynch in the side. When Tom and Jack are both playing, I don't think there's that same need to play Bolter forward unless we need, you know, something out of the box late in the game to try and jag a goal, then swing him forward and see what happens. But in terms of the bulk percentage of your game time, I think he has to stay in the back line. I think that's now done and dusted.
Yeah.
What about... we'll leave Cumberland to last. He needs a little bit of glory on his own there. Jorge Bolden, even though he kicked five behinds, he was there about CB and he was electrifying. He was clean. One of these days, those five behinds are going to be straight goals. He's going to kick seven or eight and just destroy an opposition.
Well, whoever thought to make George Castagna our goal-kicking coach, the club probably needs to rethink that. But look, pardon me. You said the word electric, and that's what that's why we have to retain this kid, not at all costs, but hopefully the culture's strong enough to retain this kid, because he's still got more. The scary thing is he's got more upside. He's only, 21, 22?
Yeah, plenty of room to grow.
He hasn't even peaked. So like Coleman was our kryptonite. He was probably Brisbane's kryptonite to a degree as well.
He did a really good job on Danaher when he went down there back on him. The million-dollar question, EJ, why is Maurice Rioli not starting more games than he has been? I know he came on just due to injury, but it felt like, and maybe it's just an optical illusion, but it felt like our pressure changed dramatically the moment he stepped on the ground, not just from him, but everyone else around him seemed to try and get on his same page, and it was just manic. It was back to what we knew.
Oh, yeah, I saw someone in the comments saying, you know, they must have got a rocket, you know, because the second half was much better. Yeah, I think I was chatting to someone on Twitter. The only thing that I can come up with, it was Carl. The only thing I can come up with as to why he's not starting is maybe he doesn't have the tank yet, and they're not sure about him running out games, because we were, I think it's got to be tank based, because we were much, much better when he's on it. He is one of those players that the opposition player, before they get the ball, they're already thinking about where is he, just because of his pure speed and his pressure. And if you've got doubt in someone's mind before they even pick up the ball, you're a fair way down the track to causing turnover. And we all know we feast off turnover.
He was unbelievable. And what about Sonzi, CB? I reckon he settled in really, really well. His transition into AFL has been fairly seamless. Like, you don't watch the game and think, oh, shit, he's a third gamer. He's well out of place here.
Well, I think Tiggs has raised the point before, and I know EJ and I have certainly discussed it, and possibly yourself too, Chris. Like, we have to keep playing these kids, regardless what happens for the rest of the year. Sonzi's a kid that cannot leave this team. We have to just keep giving him game time, because his decision making and his disposal is just bang on. He seriously looks like, what pick was Sonzi again? He was picking the 40s.
I think it was mid to late 30s. But it was, yeah, I think you muted yourself.
I reckon we might have got, oh, EJ, your microphone, EJ.
Sorry, I cut it off so I could cough. Wasn't he in the late 20s, like almost at 30? Like, didn't we have five picks inside the top 30?
Don't know. I just think this kid, I don't know why, he just reminds me a bit of a young Cochin starting out. Like, he's got it. This kid, whatever pick we got him for, absolute steal.
Whatever, late 20s, people are saying. Unbelievable. 28.
So credit to the recruiting department for that, because this kid looks the goods. Play him for the rest of the year. Lambert's out. Okay, Sonzi's in. Get him learning.
Yep.
And Noah Cumberland, I mean, I think he got the Rising Star nomination this week. EJ was well off his bandwagon after one game, wanted him taken to the cleaners, VFL, never to be seen again, all that type of talk. But I'm so wrapped. I'm
revision, think everyone is. What a bunch of revisionist bullshit that is. I said after his first game that his defensive efforts were nowhere near good enough, and I pointed to that passage of play where Castagna got smothered. Now, I know that Cumberland's a big fan of the show, and I'm rapt that he was actually able to take the advice on board. So I'd like to think that I've played some small part in his development over the last couple of weeks.
I'm super pumped for him. That last smother, it just, after what happened last week, and it was by no means his fault last week. You know, there's plenty more chances to win that game. But for him to not panic and to do the right thing, and not only to kick the five goals and be, you know, flawless there, but to lay that smother, but then to see how excited he was after that, like knowing that that had got him over the line, that was just a really special moment.
Yeah, I sent you that little clip and I said, have a look at this, you know, like, and that's, you know, no one doubted his talent. And there was more than one person saying why he was in VFL, because he wasn't doing the Richmond things. The last 2 weeks especially, he's been really good off the ball. And again, when he's kicking for goal, unlike a lot of our team who seem to really struggle with the moment, he has absolutely stepped up to the plate every time. Hasn't looked like missing.
I've just thought of something. So we're talking about Maurice Riley Jr. before.
Yep.
So I would love to see Maurice Riley Jr. come into the team. I think he's.
Yep.
So I was just thinking then, you know who a good sub would be? Gibkiss. Is he not injured? Put him in.
We don't want to put a ruckman as a sub, do we?
No, but Gibkiss is a swing man. He can play forward or back. He's a good kid.
I'm talking about Darcy Fort being the sub for Brisbane.
Oh, yeah. That's as good as Soldo being a sub, wasn't it?
Yeah, taking a look at that. Terrible, mate. Terrible.
Yeah.
I like the fleet-footedness of the sub. I like just that extra. Hugo would be the next in line for me as sub, I reckon.
Well, I just think EJ nailed it before. Keep the team young and hungry. So Miller, Sonzi, Cumberland, Hugo, even Ross, he's just a kid still. Keep those guys coming in, Cumberland. keep them coming in, young and hungry, and they will hunt, and they will do the work with the old blokes, mate. Just keep them in. Keep playing them.
Yeah, he was good. I think people making a good point with Cumberland being left-footed. We haven't had a proper left-foot forward for a while. It's just nice to see him wheel around on the left and jag a few goals. He's going to be a special player. He's creating a lot of good mismatches for us, and I think him settling into that role, learning the running patterns, I think it's been absolutely golden. And shout out to a lot of people put it in the chat, but Ben Miller doing some ruck work. Apparently he played ruck as a junior, so it wasn't completely foreign territory for him, but his ability to do that when Grimes went off really allowed Bolter to settle the defence and played a massive part in us getting back in the game too.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get stuck into... Actually, the other one, before we do the Port game, Dan Rioli, I thought his job on Charlie Cameron was excellent. And like we said on the show, he was the man because he can hurt him the other way. And when he streamed to the 50 and kicked that goal, that was precisely what we were talking about, because Cameron was nowhere to be seen. And Dan won that really good one-on-one contest deep in the line's 50. And I thought he was sensational once he was moved.
Yeah, he was great. Apparently he ran 3.5 kilometres before kicking the goal, according to Twitter. Everyone was calling for it to be too far.
It's on Twitter. Must be real.
People run further from the kick out from a behind before they kick the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, you know, that's just natural salt. Natural salt.
Rioli will be signing the contract soon, Azza. Don't worry about it.
There you go. So Miller trained for the ruck in 2020 and 21 due to the Sato injury. Okay, there we go. So adding a string to his bow, that helps keep him in the team, I reckon. All right, we'll take a look at the Port game coming up on Saturday night, I think it is. So they went down to Collingwood by 6 points on the weekend. And as we know, guys, we have to win out. We have to win every game here on in to give ourselves any chance at all of playing finals after losing a couple of games that we shouldn't have CB. But it's always a tough gig over in Adelaide. But I also think that our guys enjoy playing over there. They enjoy the challenge. They enjoy the hostility of the crowd. They thrive on it. And I think there's a small part of the mentality of our players that pour our bunnies on their own deck in some capacity. How do we manufacture a win for this game?
EJ and I were talking earlier today. We do have jobs. We just talk a little bit occasionally. Right? But we were actually discussing...
We also have wives, just to put the people's
minds at ease. Yeah, mine's called Elton John's Week. No, I think we've got to watch the power forwards, because they've got quite a tall forward line. They're actually quite... With Rosie, Dersma, Georgiadis, Dixon...
Marshall.
They've got a bit
Finn
of...
Finlayson goes forward.
Yep, they've got a bit of strike power there. So defensively, we have to really, really be on. So Bolter going back isn't a bad thing, because we'll need Miller, Bolter, and Tarrant to take those three gorillas to allow our smaller guys to take the thing. Where we can get them is Port's midfield's a bit one-paced. So Boak's a great player, don't get me wrong, but he's not quick. Wine's great player, not quick. So if we can inject a bit of speed and pace, and Lysett's a good ruckman, but he's like Nag. He's a workman-type ruckman. So they'll probably play a similar kind of game. If we can get him on an outside spread, I reckon we'll get him. That's where I think the game's going to be sorted out.
It's a good point you make, CB. The midfielders, I think we've found over the years that we've been bullied by their midfielders just from a pure physical size point of view. If we display the same pressure we did in the first half, EJ, against Port, we could end up with a very similar outcome where we're going to get sliced up. So how do we control that area of the ground, and where do you see us getting on top?
Well, first of all, we play Morris from the jump.
Bit of extra pace around the ball.
Yeah, and extra pressure. I think I agree with CB's points about them having a bit of a one-bat midfield. Their wings, Dersma's out of form. He's not playing well. We know that our wingers are really important to the way we structure up. They're very good. And our forward line, especially if Morris plays, you look at The back line with, you know, McKenzie and Jonas or whatever, they're a little bit clunky. They're not the most dynamic of back lines. And if we have Cumberland, who's lightning quick, and I think that Lynch, Rewalt, Cumberland is a good mix of types before we put the smalls around them. If you put if we put the right smalls around them, I think we can really hurt them once with the ball goes to ground in the forward line. I think they'll be a bit lumbery in that aspect compared to us.
I think, yeah, speed kills. I think speed kills Port. So, and again, now we've had three weeks in a row where teams have gone through the middle on us. So coaching group's not smarter, but I also think you can't underestimate the value of that win that we just had for Shane Edwards 300 to really like it. That second half looked like the Richmond of old, and don't be surprised if something has clicked with us. I think I can't envisage, you know, I don't want to put the kiss of death on us. I can't envisage another start to a game like we had on the weekend. Can you?
I would be surprised if we were asleep like we were in the first half. Yeah.
Yeah, correct. So, and keep in mind too, Port's, Glenn Richards made a bit of an interesting point. So Port are only playing for pride. So if you get on top of them early, they may drop off a little bit too.
Yep. So they're missing a few, right? Because Finlayson's having to do it in the ruck, and they've got, you know, like McEntee and Lockie Jones and Bergman. Like that. They're missing a few of their best 22. Their season is done. Is there also a chance that maybe one or two players that have been trying to keep them in it get a spell now?
Well, can I dial my inner Sam McClure?
Go ahead.
Ken Hinckley's probably got a little bit to coach for as well. He's been there for 12 years. Even though you and I rate him as a coach and think he's done a very, very good job, there's a bloke that hasn't got him to the hole. He's got him close, but not close enough. And now they're nowhere. So interesting to see how Kenny coach. I don't think he'll be resting him, mate, because I think there's a bit riding on it for him.
Well, he got the support of the board today, so.
No, he's gone.
Yeah. Hinkley's got the support of the board.
Oh, no, there was an article where a couple of people were saying, you know, no, he's, were they saying, oh, maybe are they not listening or are they checked out or, oh, no, we're all, it was Chad Corns, you know, like he's still our man, you know, he's been here for this long, he's still our man, he's the one, we're not going anywhere, we'll be back. So
just was on the other. I was waiting for dickhead Kane Corns to come out with something controversial to stir it all up on a Friday with his what does he have? His fireball with David King or whatever the hell it is on a Friday. I don't know.
That's a good call, Struggle Town. Don't sack Ken Hinckley this week. Just hold off, Port. Hold off. Don't do it to us.
Yeah, well, Rob's gone with he's gone in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Oh, yeah, there we go. Gone in 2 weeks. Jesus. All right, so what's our tip, including margin, for this one? And make sure if you're listening, chuck your margins in the chat as well. We'll pop a few up. Must win game. 4 points is needed to keep ourselves alive, EJ. What's the verdict? What are we going to win by?
I think we're going to win by 14 points. It's going to be a tight affair. And now, actually, I just quickly want to say, before I say this, kids, please gamble responsibly. Okay.
Yes.
We don't want anyone losing their house or anything like that. But it's been noted that Carlton have a very tough draw from here. They've got Brisbane away this week, then they've got the Demons, and then they play the Pies at the G in round 23. If they lose all three, they will not be in the eight. And you can currently get $4.50 on Sportsbet. So I'm not saying put your house on it, but I'm saying watch this space. Could be a bit of fun.
It will be extremely amusing on social media if they fall out of the eight after the shit that they flung our way after round one Long way to go after round one, Blue Baggers. It will be highly amusing.
I will say this. If we are the team to knock Carlton out of the eight, I'll do the next show shirtless.
Oh, I've got to timestamp that one.
We'll just halve our viewership.
Get leaving out the gun show out. Jeez. It's I called it a few weeks ago that Carlton are in a world of pain, and losing that game to the Crows, that's going to be the kicker. But yeah, we'll see how we go. All right, CB, what's the margin, mate? Who's going to win by how much?
I'm going to go with EJ. G'day, Skirlo, I'll do it for you, big guy.
Not a lot of love for the shirtless comments so far.
I'll say 14 points, and I'll say Jake Arts will come in as the sub.
Oh, why would you do this? Oh dear! I'll go Tigers by 21. I reckon we'll get the job done. I don't really care who's sub, but I reckon Gibkiss will come in for Grimes, and that might be about it in terms of changes. Other than if we can squeeze Rioli in as a proper fully fledged player, and maybe have Mansell or Ralph Smith as the sub, but I don't think there'll be too many other changes outside of that, assuming no injuries pop up. Now, I haven't been ignoring your comment deliberately. It's because I wanted to mention it at the end. I'll just say watch this space. I have flagged it with the gentleman about the prospect of a live show. I've cleared it with the lovely wife at home that if this goes ahead, I need the space. I need to be able to do this because we haven't done one all year. And I know it's something that we enjoy doing. It's a bit of fun. And I know it's something you guys enjoy because the commentary is usually shithouse against us. It's just a matter of if we can get the stars to align to get a crew together. I don't care how many. But if we can get some of the guys on, we can definitely try and pull together a live show. So watch this space. We'll try and get something organised because it's the last interstate game. I think we do have to try and get one in.
If I do this show, if I do the live one, I'll do it with no socks and matching underwear. Promise.
No socks and matching underwear. Yeah, I don't know. If we do it, I don't know whether it will be this format where you can see us. I have seen the West Coast guys who use this same program do it where they have like a banner, I suppose, like a background as the display, and they update the score. So it's more like an audio thing because you don't really want to have to be watching the screen at us and then the game at the same time. You want to be more just listening to us. So it may not be a visual one. So you can sit there naked if you need CB. So we'll see how we go. If we can get some of the guys together, I'll see what we can pull together. But I just don't think it'll be a visual one from our point of view because it would seem silly taking your eyes off the game. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how we go. All right. Thank you. Surely I don't say it every week, Luke, because I have to go back and check that. Hopefully I don't say it.
He does, Lucas. He does.
He does. All right, thanks so much for your time tonight, guys. Thanks so much to Wayne also for jumping in before for the first half an hour. Always great to hear from the Titans legends.
Thanks, mate. Yeah.
Oh, well, I can't help. You should have bowed on your meeting. Don't worry about cricket. It's August. Jesus. No, we'll definitely try and get him back on at some point because there was just so much stuff to talk to him about, both Richmond and life after football. So thank you for your hard work, EJ, and the questions, mate. Much appreciated. And thanks so much, Jeremy, for tuning in. Make sure you follow us on all our socials on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Yeah, get around us and we'll hopefully keep an eye on our socials. We'll try and have some news about a live call hopefully for this week. And it should be a bit of fun. Hopefully we win. So until next time, a Twitch plug. I'm not sure if we're on tonight, Grok. We'll see. But if anyone is on Twitch, come by and say hi to us. But until next time, guys, go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Love you all. No shirt. I'll just